Welcome back to the second hour of Guitar Tracks. I'm your host, Brian Tarquin. Tonight I have a great interview with the Austrian guitarist Gerald Gradwall. He was the guitarist for Tangerine Dream from 1995 to 2007. I like his playing because he infuses a lot of rock guitar, so he explains how he got started with music.
Like I think every other kid who wants to play an instrument, started with about 10 years and then started with classical guitar. Till the moment when one of my teachers showed me for the first time the minor pentatonic and said, hey, you can improvise on everything with that. And from this moment on, I just wanted to do nothing else than that. And so I quit playing classical guitar and started playing electrical guitar and playing with pentatonic and stuff like that. And yeah, so that was the beginning. I really fell in love with the electrical guitar, and I always loved the sound of guitar and all the great bands that I could listen into in my early days. I remember that I listened a lot to stuff like Rolling Stones or The Sweet, and yeah, Kiss, AC/DC, and all these kind of bands. So my roots are really rock and roll and even hard rock, I would say. When I was a teenager, and my brother, he was already listening to some jazz music, and he said to me, you know, you will play some jazz music in the future too. And I said, no, never. I will always be a hard rock guitar player. And yeah, it was funny. It changed a little, but it's still in my heart, and I love rock music, and a few of my biggest influences are rock guitar players like Gary Moore. He was my absolute favorite in the 80s. Before his blues phase, I didn't like the blues phase too much, but I loved his mainstream hard rock records like Corridors of Power, I think was his first solo record. That was really amazing. And I had the luck to see him live in Vienna for two or three times. And he was a monster. He was so very expressive. It was cool. I really was a fan of him. Yeah, and one of my other favorite rock guitar players are the greats like Angus Young in my early days. And I really was a big fan of Edward Van Halen because he was so unique and so innovative. But I don't mean too much his soloing, which was great, but he was one of the best rhythm guitar players to me. I loved his rhythm guitar parts, and he was really very, very important for me. A little bit later, then I changed my style a little bit. So I don't know. I played in a hard rock band, and I thought that there must be something else than playing scales up the neck as fast as possible. And there must be something else than the major and minor scale and stuff like that. So yeah, and I found that in jazz music. So I started to listen to the guys who mixed rock and jazz, like Mike Stern or Scofield, the early Scofield records. They had the power of rock, but also the harmonics of jazz. So that really changed my likes a little bit. And so I got into jazz music. I went to a conservatory in Vienna and studied jazz guitar. So that was my thing. I hadn't had too much lessons before on the electric guitar. I did almost everything on my own and learning from books and reading print magazines and stuff like that. After high school, I need somebody to help me with all the harmony and theory and so I went to a conservatory and I got a great teacher here who we had a real cool relationship and we got friends. And so I showed him some rock licks because I was pretty fast at that time. and he showed me all the other stuff, which was really cool. I learned a lot from him. It was a very important period in my musical career. And I always wanted to have background to get a job later for teaching, which I did then. So I have a degree, and this is important to get a teaching job. And I got a job at another conservatory in Austria, and I'm teaching there till now. So it's 30 years ago.
I really like when players reach further and move out of the box of just rock guitar and try to learn different voicings of jazz, because it makes everyone a better player all around. Now he explains how it was just by accident he joined the band Tangerine Dream.
This was by accident, but I can explain. Tangerine Dream, the guys, they were from Germany. They moved to Austria, to a lake which is not too far from my home. They started a second home in Austria and moved here and had a studio. And they were looking for a local guitar player. And in the village where they have moved, there was one guitar player who was a former student of mine, and they checked him out, and they both came to the conclusion that it didn't fit too well. But this guy told Edgar that he knows somebody who maybe could do this job, and this was me. So Edgar called me, and then I drove to the studio. We had some kind of little session where they played a few tracks, upcoming album, and I had to jam to the tracks, and then I got the job, and then we recorded an album, which was pretty cool then, because I didn't know too much about Tangerine Dream, to be honest. I knew the name, and I knew they are some kind of famous or a cult band, but I never knew really the music. But the name was really I heard it before, and so I got to know them personally. And then I realized what kind of project it was, because we played a few big gigs in around Europe, where there were fans from all over the world. That was really, really cool and very surprising for me, because I didn't have that before. So it was really, really nice. It didn't last too long, but it was also very important and nice period in my career. I was there for two records and some single gigs. There was a tour planned, an American tour, which has been canceled on short term. So it didn't happen. And I recorded a second album where we recorded a lot of guitar tracks on this album. But most of the guitar tracks didn't finish on the album, because it was the time when the Alesis Aidat recording stuff. And this was the beginning, and they had a technician from Berlin, and we recorded everything on Aidat. There really were a lot of tracks, a lot of guitar tracks, and I think it was really cool stuff. The recording was ready, and I don't remember exactly when, but a few days or weeks, Edgar called me and said, "Oh man, almost all the tracks we recorded are gone." And I said, "What?" So they really lost some tracks. Don't ask me why. I don't know. And I was really pissed, because they had a release date that they had to take. And so we couldn't record. We couldn't make some more days for recording. So there were just two songs left with my guitars on, and all the cool stuff was somewhere. I don't know where. Oh, that was not too cool. But, you know, things happen. We had a second time when I played with them for a short period, which was in the 2000s, I think. Two DVDs came out from two concerts. And I think they some live concerts that were recorded and released afterwards, which is pretty nice stuff, yeah. The second one was Goblins Club. The first one was Tyranny of Beauties. That was the title. Goblins Club was the one with the missing guitar tracks. And then another thing with this Goblins Club record was that even there were just two tracks left with my guitars on, the credits were wrong, so I think I'm just credited on one track. but I played on two. Yeah, it was really, really strange. This record, there was a certain vibe that didn't want my guitars on that record. Yeah, a lot of keyboards. They had another guy on the guitar before. He was from Switzerland, I think, and they split up. I don't know why. So they were used to that. And the thing is, all that stuff was programmed on computers and sequencers, and they used live musicians to make it a little bit more live music. So there was a percussionist and a guitarist, and sometimes a singer, because the two guys only sat on their keyboards and played a little. No, they wrote nothing. They had an idea how it should sound. Mostly I played and jammed to the tracks. You know, they're almost every track is a modal track with a few changes in after 2 minutes it jumps from, I don't know, D minor to A flat minor or something like that for another 2 or 3 minutes. So I could jam a lot, but they always wanted me to play pretty melodic, which was a very cool experience for me. And, you know, when you used to play jazz and improvise, at least I'm not always very melodic. So I had to arrange myself with that. So, but it was a cool experience, and I learned a lot by doing that. But it wasn't that easy as it maybe sounds now when I tell that, because they had really strange forms, like, I don't know, somewhere in the half of a beat, it jumped to another beat. It really was very hard to remember. It was hard to learn the stuff for the live gigs. And I always had my sheets on the ground where I wrote, okay, this is 39 bars in whatever key, and then 7.5 bars in another thing. Sometimes it was really, really weird. Looking back and thinking about the time, I have to say that it was a great experience to play with an act like that, because you don't have too many possibilities in a country like Austria to play a big act like that. I mean, we have some local guys, but nothing like this, where people from all over the world are coming to the concerts. We played in London 2 times, sold out, with people from everywhere. That was really cool, and I loved it. Yeah, you asked about the collaboration. They were pretty cool, mostly. I could do my stuff, but I had to do it in a melodic way. Let's say it like this. Yeah, and I could play also a lot of single note rhythm guitar stuff, which I love to play. As I'm an 80s guy, I grew up in the 80s. I always wanted to be a studio musician, and I loved all the great records like Al Jarreau or the George Benson records or Toto, where all these cool, clean single note guitars in the background were happening. And so I could use a little bit of that. In Tangerine Dream too, it wasn't just soloing, it was a lot of rhythm guitar too. I liked it.
Oh, that ADAT story brings back horrific memories of those things. They were just a VCR tape that had been engineered just to record audio, and they were always flaking out. Now he goes on to tell me how he left Tangerine Dream and he recorded his first solo album here in the U.S.
This was about 96 when I first left Tangerine Dream, and I think... No, 95, it was parallel. I had a trio, which was called Trio, like three and an O, and we did 3 records, and this was also very important, maybe the most important band to develop my jazz vocabulary, something like that, because we were 3 guys at the same age, some kind of the same level, and we rehearsed and played gigs to get better and better, and we did a lot of gigs, small touring and stuff, and this was a very important phase in my life, and we played mostly songs of mine that I wrote. So I would say this was the beginning of the solo career, and under my own name I started to release records, I think, at the end of 2002. I made my first solo record, which was ABQ, that I recorded in America. Yeah, with Gary Willis on bass, and Kirk Covington from Tribal Tech, and with Bob Berg on the saxophone. With the band Trio that I mentioned before, we hired Bob Berg for a tour, and we recorded a live recording which came out. It's called Free Your Life, featuring Bob Berg in 98, I think. I got to know Bob, and we had a connection, some kind of a connection. And then I always thought of, or even dreamt of doing a record with my favorite musicians, or some kind of favorite musicians. And I'm a big Tribal Tech fan, Scott Henderson and Tribal Tech. So this rhythm section was my favorite, and a friend of mine studied or took lessons with Gary Willis. So he made the connection, and he connected us. And then, I asked them, sent them some tapes if they would do that. And it was cool because I asked Bob Berg before if he would do a record with me with some American guys. So the other guys knew that Bob Berg would be on the record. They didn't know me. And I think this was the reason why they said, okay, let's do it. When Bob Berg is on the record, they wanted to do something with him too. And this was the connection. And then I, arranged and wrote a few tunes, and I flew to America. We recorded. It ended on MRC, which was Universal then. But I didn't knew that before recordings. I just did it on my own. I pre-financed it, and then I tried to get a label for that. I had to fly studio, hotel stuff, some kind of fee for the musicians, and I got a little bit from Universal back, but not too much. So, but I think it was really a good decision to do this record, because with these sidemen, the people saw it on the website. Abstract Logics, for example, was some kind of fusion website where McLaughlin and Henderson and Wayne Krantz put out their records. And so I was also on this website, and they saw that Bob Berg and Willis and Covington played on the record. So it was, people got to know me a little bit better, let's say like that. Because when you're an Austrian guy, I don't know, it's difficult. And so it was not my first intention to do name dropping. My first intention was I wanted to record with my favorite musicians. And with Kirk, I'm still in contact. We played a few tours together, and we are planning one more next year or this year. So it was a good connection. Yeah, and from this moment on, I made all my records on my own. We recorded in Santa Fe because Gary Willis lived in Santa Fe this time, and we recorded in a studio from a friend of Gary. So I went to Albuquerque and then to Santa Fe, and we recorded there. The product, the outcome, the record is really cool. I think it sounds good, and we did a real good job on mixing and stuff. But I came there and nothing worked. They had to change the mixing desk. So you're a guy from Austria flying there alone with his guitar and a few pedals, and you rely on the guys. I mean, Gary, it's not his fault, but really nothing worked. I rented all my stuff there. I rented the top and the cabinet, and the first day was just waiting that the mixing desk works, and it ended that they threw out the old mixing desk and checked the new one. It was crazy. I was cool, and this will never happen to me again. But on the second day, everything worked, and we did 2 days of cool recordings, and everything was fine. But first day was really, really hard for me. It was not too funny there, but it worked out in the end, and it was good. We recorded on Digital Performer. I think I didn't know the program, and I took the files just with my hard drive and imported it in my system at home, and I did some kind of corrections and some editing, and then we mixed it in Austria and did the mastering in Austria, And the mixing engineer is one of the best in Austria who did this album, and he's a friend of mine, and he really did a very good job, I think. It still sounds good, this record. I was there a week, 2 days before or 1 day before, and 2 days after, and the 3 days of the recording. My system is that we record everything live, and we have to change something. We change it immediately. Like if everything was cool and the solos were cool and there was maybe a mistake in the head, I do it immediately after the recording when we said, okay, this track is cool, let's keep that. But in this case, as I rented all the stuff and had just one guitar with me, I thought, okay, I record with the guys then there, and then I go home and record everything new with my sound, with my gear and with my equipment. That was my plan. That was my plan. So I had a rented top, same top head, Marshall head that I had have at home, and cabinet. And I wasn't too happy with the sound that I heard. So in the studio, in the earphones, but I thought, okay, it works. And yeah, we will do it. I'll fix everything at home. So, and then I was at home and started to record to the tracks and to change everything. And I did that for about, I don't know, a few days, a week, or always when I had some time, I did some recording. Then I thought, okay, I take a listen to the original tracks. And I listened to the original tracks and thought, I'm such an idiot. I keep all that stuff that I recorded there because it had a certain vibe. And when I recorded at home, I couldn't get the vibe that we had in the studio. But I wasn't aware of that when I tried to record. So, and then I kept every solo from there. I just changed, I think, two heads where I wasn't, maybe it wasn't well played or I wasn't happy with the sound. And this is what I changed, but everything that where it was important that it's played live, I kept the original tracks. And so that was also experience I made where I learned a lot from this situation. So I always keep my first tracks and the first takes because you never know when you have to go back to track one. Or take one. I think that was the most important thing, that there was a certain vibe and we had a feeling together and we played together and we felt each other. Maybe that was the reason that it didn't work when I recorded at home.
Man, I've been there and done that. I've recorded live with a band in the studio and maybe I would go back and even doing it in the same studio, but at a later date to do overdubs, but the vibe is gone. So you're not vibing off of the same musicians. Now he explains about his new album, Episode 6, and one of my favorite songs of his, Viking.
My new album is, it's with my regular band here, with my friends and bandmates. We play together in this lineup since about 8 years or something like that. And this is my regular touring band here in Austria. We played a lot of gigs during the last years. And you know the musicians, you know what they can play well and where they sound good and where they are really good at. I was always composing and writing songs, and I planned to do a record maybe this year, but then COVID came, which was about a year ago, and I had about half of the songs for a new record and some unfinished business. Then from March on, we had no gigs, and so I decided to prepone the record and finish the songs that had to be finished. And we went in the studio, played two gigs before and recorded it. It also has a certain vibe because we know each other pretty well and we are some kind of a band, although it's under my name. I see it as a band. I finished it a year before I planned to finish it because I wanted to do it in 21, but I did it in 2020. Half of the songs were finished and I had about 70% where some fine tuning had to be done with the songs or with composing. And I finished that to record. And then we recorded in summer. We were 2 days in the studio. It's again a live record with some additions at home. On two tracks, I added acoustic guitar and some swell sounds, which I couldn't do live at the same time. But that's it pretty much. Rest is pretty much live. With the band, I went in an official regular studio, a nice studio near my hometown. All the editing and stuff and correcting or overdubbing I did in my home studio. I have just a small studio with a small recording room, and all my amps are here, so I can record very professionally here, but it's not a big official studio. It's just my home thing. Yes, one more thing. I love the TV series Vikings. I just was thinking I wanted something at the beginning that is different than the rest of the concert, which makes you really stand up and listen. Oh, what's that now? So they are waiting for a jazz record, and then you have a drop tuning thing with a strange melody. This was the idea. The title is just some result of my Netflix TV streaming series thing. This record is a little bit jazzier than the rest, than my records before, I think. Maybe just a little bit. A little bit more changes, not so much modal stuff. Generally, I love the sound of guitar and saxophone, this kind of thing. This is a result of my favorite bands in the 90s and in the 80s, like Bob Berg, Mike Stern Band, or Michael Brecker Group, and all that kind of stuff. I always loved it. In K-Log, we do an improvisation all together as the solo, which sometimes sounds like a guitar solo or a saxophone solo. Sometimes it sounds when we all solo together. It was on purpose, and it was a try, and I think it came out pretty cool. As said, I wanted to do a little bit different than before, and always doing a solo section of this instrument, solo section of this instrument, more some kind of soloing together, but not to come into the free area. That's not my goal. It should still be groovy and have a funk vibe, or it shouldn't be free jazz, and that's really difficult. My regular guys, they are Harry Tanchek, from Austria. He studied in Berkeley. He lived in America for 10 years, but is in Austria again since years. And then my longtime friend, Thomas Kugi, he's the saxophone player. I play with him since over 20 years in different projects also. And the bass player is Jojo Lakner. One, we're not even the best guy here around. He's a killer groove bass player. He's a monster. And yeah, this is the band and me.
I love that whole idea. They're waiting for a jazz record, and the opening track is like this detuned hard rock, heavy metal punch in the face. I love it. Wake up the listener. Now he goes on to tell me what he uses live versus the studio gear-wise, and his favorite guitars and pedals.
Yeah, I used a Friedman Rund 50 head in the studio. This is the one that I also use live. It's a Plexi-type 2-channel 50-watt head that I like a lot. And for the cleaner stuff, I use Sir Badger 35, which is also a nice amp that I like. And my cabinets were a Red Marshall from the 80s 412 cab that I recently bought back, because I sold this cab 30 years ago to a guy in my hometown, and I bought it back last year. My own cab, yeah. And I bought it a few weeks before we went into the studio, and speakers were still great, so I use them for most of the stuff in the studio. And I have another 112 with G12 75 Celestians that I used for the cleaner stuff in combination with the Sir Badger. And then I had a few pedals, my favorite pedals, which were, I always have an RC booster with me, the exotic RC booster. Yeah, to boost either the crunch channel of the Rund 50 or to boost another overdrive that I have after that. And I use an Occo Diablo. I don't know if you know, it's a German, some kind of boutique pedal. So very nice Occo Diablo. My Roger Mayer Voodoo vibe for one or two songs. And Octopus, my Octopus, it's just a full tone Octopus, the big one. And I think for one thing, I use the Mugafuga ring modulator, the big one also that I own. Of course, for the organ modulation, sometimes I used my Line 6 HX Dom. It has a nice organ vibe sound on it. It's a small Line 6 HX Dom. Yeah, and guitar-wise, I mostly played my main guitar that I also use live, American Standard Strut from 93. It's just a regular Strut with Kinman pickups in there, but this is the guitar I grab when I don't know which guitar I should use on something. So I always grab this one. Yeah, because I played so much on this guitar and I was in America with that guitar in Canada and all around Europe. That's some kind of my guitar. It's not a special one, but I like it. It has a maple neck and the only thing that I changed are the Kinman pickups. I love to have it noiseless and I love the Kinman stuff. Then I used a Custom Shop strap from 2016 and my Gibson 335. From 2010, that also pretty new for me because I never owned a Gibson guitar. 2019, and now I have two. I bought two. No, three. Three. Sorry, three. I bought three in the last 3 years. I never owned a Gibson guitar, so I thought I have to have some Gibsons. And I used the 335 for the jazzier cleaner guitars. And live, I use almost the same stuff. I don't take the 412 with me. Mostly I play a 212 from Blue Guitar. Don't know if you know the Amp One, the company that makes the little small amp. It's called Amp One. It's Thomas Blug from Germany. And he made a great cabinet. It's called Blue Guitar Twin Cab. He made also a small tube amp with three channels that you put on the board. And this is the company where I mostly use the cab. It's called Blue Guitar. Pedal-wise, at the moment, I use my Diablo Oco Overdrive, the RC booster. And I recently bought the MI Audio Tube Zone. It's an overdrive that doesn't exist anymore, but it's a super cool thing. There are four versions, I think. And in the meantime, I have three of them. And I use a Line 6 HX Effects. That's the smaller version of the Line 6 Helix, if you know, familiar with that, maybe. Just for effects, just for delay and reverb and some chorus when I need it. But I don't use too much chorus. I use the chorus mostly as a simulation of an organ sound. That's my use of a chorus, some kind of wobbly chorus, because it's standing beside me. My Yamaha Pacifica USA Custom. It's a tele body with three pickups and a humbucker. They do not produce this kind of guitar anymore, but they produced it for 2 years and they're pretty rare and it's a very cool and very good guitar. I used it for Vikings. I would be happy if the guys go to my website and check out the records I have. Website is www.gradwohl.at. It's gradwohl.at. And there is all the info about the new record, about the former records. And yeah, I would be happy if some of the guys listen to the music and hopefully they like it.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they'll love it. Now everyone go out there to GeraldGradwohl.at and check out his music, especially this new one with that track Viking that I really like. It was a great pleasure sitting down with Gerald, and we're going to actually work together on a track this year. Here's Viking.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Gerald Gradwohl, and you're listening to Guitar Tracks on the radio station WFIT, the best instrumental music on the Florida coast.
That's a new one from Gerald Gradwohl. Let's Talk, from his album Episode 6. Before that was Tangerine Dream's Stratosphere, featuring Gerald on guitar.